none other than Mr. Shinigami. How are you, sir?
I'm doing all right. Thank you for having me on.
And yes, you have become a viral sensation. And speaking of which, they don't pay you there, obviously.
Nope. That's one of the ways they actually keep it legal.
Legal.
I mean, it exists in this legal gray area. It's legal because they don't charge admission, they don't pay the fighters, and they don't make money off of the events at all. So it's not like, you know, and they're amateur. So they're amateur exhibitions. They're exhibition matches, like exhibition, like hard sparring fights. You know, it's not, you know.
They're not sanctioned, in other words, for the newer people out there.
Yeah, but they're, you know, we do all sign a waiver. We're all there because we all want to, you know, test ourselves and compete. Some
right.
of us are there to settle disputes, which is what Street View started for in the first place. And it's not just what you see on the videos, you know, people fighting in a backyard in a homemade cage. It's actually a community. Everybody I've fought, I mean, there's Facebook groups, there's you know, the Instagrams, there's websites, there's all kinds of group chats all over the place for all of us. And, you know, everybody I fought, I pretty much talk to on a daily basis now, except for Big Smile, but that's because I got to rematch him. So trying to keep it all business.
We're going to talk about Big Smile as we move along here. But yes,
but
these are things I had no idea. So I'm glad you are telling me and, you know, the newer people out there.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't really know about that because a lot of people really only know what they see or perceive what they see. So, you know, people perceive Street Beefs as just, you know, another underground backyard fight, you know, thing where people are probably illegally getting paid. But that's not what's happening. You know, it's not like Kimbo Slice or those guys where
yeah.
they were, you know, doing it because they needed to do it to survive. And they were doing illegal stuff to get money to survive. And it was just getting posted on the internet so that people could see it. you know, it's rest in peace, Kimbo, by the way. It's a community of competitors and people who want to settle disputes. And, you know, it's very welcoming and it's very cohesive. And I mean, everyone's just great. And
right.
it's actually recently become a recruiting ground for Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship. Which is just more proof for people who think it's not legal. It's legal. Otherwise, you know, they wouldn't have something like that going on, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
That's a major promotion, and they obviously would not be having contracts to recruit from a backyard organization if they were doing everything illegally. Scarface is very protective of the brand and makes sure everything is legal, and that's why there's only a few chapters of Street Beefs. Originally, there was just the one. And the only people who have a Street Beast branch now are people who didn't even ask for it. He offered them to run one. So, you know, that's just how it is. You know, it's really even when we went over to the East Coast to fight over there, everyone was so welcoming and, like, you know, excited to meet me. We'll actually talk about when we get to that.
Yeah, no worries. But, no worries. But, yes, you are talking about Scarface. Chris Wilmore, I believe, the director
yes.
or the – dictator of the yard, in other words.
Yeah, the founder of Street Beast, Chris Wilmore.
I was wondering about that. You know, in the intro, it says after the fight, you know, you hear the outro, rather, and you hear about picking up a gun and fighting and all that, and you're like, well, what the hell's going on here?
Oh, yeah, so it's guns down, gloves up.
Correct, right.
That's literally what it started before he was even filming it. He would go around to little local places and, like, I can't remember exactly how it started, but I think somebody at some point had either intervened in a situation that could have ended in gun violence over something stupid and offered him to fight in his yard, or somebody actually asked him to fight in his back or to ref a fight to settle a beef. So he got the idea, having been in jail before and been around gangsta stuff and, you know, growing up in kind of the hood his whole life.
Sure.
Came
yeah.
up with the idea of, well, you know what? This is a good idea. Let me go start, you know, putting up flyers and stuff in local, you know, bars and you know, markets like bodegas, stuff like that. You know,
and it's not a bad idea.
Yeah, and that's how it started, man. People were coming to him with to settle their disputes. Then they started filming them, and then one day he decided to upload it to YouTube. Never planning to have a big, huge following. Never imagining it was going to go where it has gone, and you know, then it was not just beef fights anymore. Then, you know, he started letting other people who just wanted to test themselves fight, because, you know, I don't know, a lot of people don't probably realize this, but it actually costs money to register with the state athletic commission, your local amateur organization, your state amateur organization, and they don't pay you either. So you got to go out of pocket to do these fights with an amateur org trying to go pro, where no one's really going to see it except for whoever's there.
Right. Yeah.
Versus street beefs, where you're going to get thousands and thousands and thousands of views. You know, so it's good exposure. In fact, it's such good exposure. Some guy went on there one time to fight just to promote his plumbing business, and that was his fight name was his plumbing business name.
Oh my, that is funny. Yeah, I don't think anyone imagined it would become that popular, and I'm sure you yourself, did not. You didn't think you'd become a viral sensation of sorts. I mean, 3.8 million people, I believe, watched you kick that guy in the face the last time I checked.
Yep. No, I didn't expect to blow up overnight like that. I kind of figured, I was hoping to get, you know, a following off of it. I didn't think I was going to get a following off of it from my very first fight.
Yeah.
I wore the gi to stand out, and because it kind of gives you a little bit of a, you know, some friction for clinch work grips and
sure.
stuff. Kind of why Hoyce Gracie wore a gi in UFC 1, you know, so that when you're dealing with a guy that doesn't have a shirt, or they're wearing a rash guard, they're kind of slippery, they're sweaty, whatever, you know, it gives you a little bit of a defensive edge there. Plus, you know, it looked cool. And I think that was kind of the whole thing was just ended up being a perfect storm of, I'm wearing this gi, and my whole thing's color coordinated. People thought I wasn't going to do very well. Everyone thought I looked like some guy from a McDojo.
People thought you were going to get your ass kicked, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, people perceive
they
what
assume.
They see.
Right.
Not all the 13 years of training behind my, you know, the black belt I was wearing.
Yeah. Hold on. Hold on. Don't reveal anything. Let me see if I can guess this. You know, you had, from what I can tell, just by watching you opening up with this first fight here, I was looking at you and I saw your stance and I thought, okay, this guy most likely had some traditional martial arts training. And then all of a sudden you throw the roundhouse kick right to the jaw. And you won me over right away.
Thanks.
Oh yeah, it was good. Very good. Yeah, am I wrong? Am I right or am I wrong here with what I said?
You're actually correct. I mean, it's kind of on my gi too, though.
Well, I wasn't paying attention to the gi. I mean, you know, I'm watching the video. I'm kind of high, yeah. Kind of drinking. You know how that goes.
Well, yeah, I was. But yeah, I am trained in Kenpo Shotokan Karate. It's a combination of Kenpo, American Kenpo self-defense with like Shotokan forms. You know, it was kind of around before my Shion started the school, but he kind of made it his own curriculum because he took over a Shotokan school and he's a Shotokan black belt, but his primary art is Kenpo. So he had to adapt everything so that the students that were already there could continue from where they were and then learn all the Kenpo stuff. And then by the time I joined, it was just all Kenpo Shotokan. And then I also have a lot of jiu-jitsu training. Been doing that for about 8 years, although a lot of that wasn't necessarily in a gym, you know, because jiu-jitsu school is expensive.
Very expensive, yeah.
So I had money problems for a while. And so I was kind of just going over to friends' houses that also did jiu-jitsu and had mats in the garage and just rolling with them like a couple times a week, if not, you know, more than, you know, I tried to hit 2 to 4 times a week in people's garages at least to keep the rust off.
Yeah, I know about that. Oh, yeah.
So
quite familiar with going to backyards and garages.
Yeah, man. So that was how I kept my jiu-jitsu training up between having gyms to train in. And then, yeah.
Very cool.
All came together in the yard that day. And between knocking the dude out so fast, which I didn't expect it to be over that quick either. I was actually shocked that it was over that fast. I was like, really? I drove 2 hours and it's over in 4 seconds? Are you kidding me?
That's what you want, though. You know, in and out.
Well, yeah, it is. I just had expected more of a fight since that was my first time doing full contact.
You came out like Ken in the fight.
Yeah. Yep.
Awesome. Yeah, man, I really loved that. I was quite impressed. I'm sure everyone out there was quite impressed with you, too. You earned instant respect, I'm quite sure, amongst everyone there in the yard. And, of course, everyone around the world, they tuned in for that, not knowing that they would find this sort of a karate figure all of a sudden emerge from the darkness of the internet here. It's pretty awesome. I was, again, quite impressed with that. I really like seeing that. I hope you keep fighting. And we'll talk about your fights in a moment here, but you know, you were talking about the organization itself. Well, not really an organization. Well, can we say that?
Yeah, it's an organization. It's definitely an organization. It's a, you know, Starface uses the term organization all the time. I mean, it is organized in a, you know, in the sense of they plan the events ahead of time. Right. They make sign up posts. They, you know, have referees and volunteer medics on hand, and you know, it's organized in the literal sense of the word, that it's an organization. It's organized. You know, it is that's exactly what it is. I mean, they have branding, they have logos.
Yes, and by the way, there was also a article that ESPN put out. I remember a couple years ago, back in 2019, that was a pretty good article, and I'm sure the people there, the staff writers, they had no idea that it would be this popular in 2021. But furthermore, you know, you said Kimbo, and that reminded me, the last person I talked to that was doing the whole backyard thing, not that you are, but that was running an organization like that, was Data 5000. He was on this program too many, many years ago, right before he fought Kimbo. And the man did say that somebody was going to leave in a stretcher, I believe. He did say that in on the show. And and they both left on a stretcher, by the way.
I know. I was,
yeah.
I was going to say the heart attack snuggle fest.
He was in line. He was in line. He was right.
Yeah, I mean, he was right, but he was right in the way that detail was right with his, if you don't know me, you're about to.
Yeah.
He was right, but not in the way he wanted to be right.
That's right. So obviously these words I'm saying are resonating with you. So that means you are also a very long time MMA fan.
Oh, yes. Very cool. Actually, funnily enough, when I started martial arts, I had no intention of ever competing. I just wanted to learn how to defend myself.
Sure.
And, you know, get some exercise and, you know, I didn't know anything about MMA at all because my mom would never let me watch anything violent. Never got into professional wrestling or boxing or any of that.
Nothing.
Stuff. Nothing.
Oh my.
So
was your mom religious? You know,
yep, extremely.
Oh, I see. Okay, go ahead.
So I, which is ironic because a lot of those Bible stories are pretty violent.
That's true. Yes.
My favorite biblical character when I was a kid was Samson. Killed how many Philistines with a broken jawbone? Like hundreds of them.
Yeah.
You know, I had an animated version of that. You know, Hanna-Barbera used to do animated Bible stories for kids, and that was still pretty violent for a kids' cartoon.
Right.
Anyway.
Wait a minute. Don't leave the mom thing out. Yes. Does she know what her baby boy is doing?
Oh, yeah, she knows.
Oh, no. Is she upset with you?
No.
She's cool.
She doesn't really care. Okay. But the whole thing was, I was getting that was, so I didn't even know about the UFC or anything really until I was like a teenager. One of my friends told me about it, but I still didn't watch it, you know. And then I did kind of see a couple episodes of The Ultimate Fighter at my uncle's place one time, hanging out when I was in culinary school. And, you know, I my understanding of what MMA was it was strictly Muay Thai and Jiu-Jitsu like combined, because that's all anyone was talking about on the show, is that they know Muay Thai and they know Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and da da da. Right. So I was like, okay, well, I do karate. You know, when I went later on, when I was started doing karate, I was like, well, I do karate. I really don't have any interest in that. Right. Then I was channel surfing one day, and on Spike TV, they used to have Ultimate UFC or whatever. They would show like older fights. And I just happened to channel surf right past Lyoto Machida walking out, and they said Shotokan karate. And I flipped back like right away, and I was like, wait a minute, what? So they were talking about he's Shotokan black belt and has a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And then the other guy he fought was a judo guy. So I watched the fight. Lyoto Machida completely just mollywhopped Sokuju. And that got me interested in MMA. So I was like, oh, okay, so you can do karate and do MMA. Because at that point, I had been competing for a bit. And I had started to notice this point karate, since you're not allowed to knock people out. And it really comes down to what the corner judges see. A lot of times they don't see what you got because their angle. Sometimes you know you hit the guy. The other guy knows you hit him, but no one's going to sit there. They're not going to sit there and give up a point.
Right.
If the judge didn't see it, because they spent $50 to do that, you know, division two, just like you did.
Yeah.
And probably drove another 2 hours like you did to get there. You know, and after all of that, getting up at the butt crack of dawn and shelling out money and gas and travel time, no one wants to just go in there and lose because they're being honest.
That's right.
So, you know, it got to the point where it's like, man, maybe I should try this out. And then this one tournament in Vegas started having a like an MMA sparring division. So I went to do that, and also because I wanted to use some of the like, there's a lot of really cool takedowns you learn in karate that a lot of people don't know about. Because again, everything is what you see is how you perceive things.
Until you get in there and do it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, what you see in sport karate is like a super limited down rule set where you can't do the takedowns anymore. You blah, 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 blah. Can't knock people out unless you're doing like Kyokushin. So I was like, yeah, I want to do this and that and the other thing. So I went and tried it, and I kind of ended up getting beat on the ground. Even though I trained a little MMA, a few MMA classes for a couple of months before I went and did it, just to have some defense. And the one thing I got caught with, which was an armbar from the mount, I didn't know how to defend it. The one thing I hadn't learned how to defend yet, for like beginner stuff. And then after that, I was just like, okay, so this is cool and da da da. But one of these days, I got to get in there. And then I found out how much they were making. Like, they were making almost as much in one fight as I was making in a year at the pro level and like the UFC doing these MMA fights. And I'm like, yeah, I need to go do this.
Yeah. You're in the wrong business, you thought.
Oh yeah, for sure. I was in the wrong business. The culinary industry sucks. I'll tell you that right now. If you think you're going to, you know, make money and be the next Gordon Ramsay, I got news for you. You're not, because it's a dime a dozen and you're competing with the guy off the street. So that overpriced culinary school education you get thinking you're going to have a leg up because you come out with a degree. Nobody who owns a restaurant gives a crap about that. Not even like those bigger guys most of the time, like Gordon Ramsay. Most of those guys don't care that you went to culinary school or not. They want someone who's got actual line experience. The guy who went, you know, has been working in a restaurant since they were in high school and never went to culinary school has probably got a better shot of getting a job in a kitchen than you do fresh out of culinary school with a degree. Plus, the degree don't make you more money like they tell you in the recruiting office either. You're getting the same pay as the guy off the street that never went to culinary school and probably has more experience than you, which is usually minimum wage or just a couple bucks above it.
I had no idea that's what you were up to.
Yep. That was what I decided to do with my life before I started taking martial arts. If I'd have started learning martial arts sooner, I probably would have never gone that route.
It's probably a good thing because right now, due to the pandemic, that's a pretty hard business to conduct right now, especially with everything going on. Everything's kind of iffy right now in terms of restaurants.
Yeah, I definitely got out at the right time.
Oh, yeah, I would say so.
The last job I had was actually a PE teacher at a charter school that I didn't know had a really high turnaround rate. And I kind of can see why they had a really high turnaround rate for the non-certified positions like PE teacher. Didn't even think about looking on the internet to see if there was employee reviews for the place. Because when I started looking for work, I graduated from high school in 2005. I got out of culinary school in like 2006. You know, I started out doing paper applications and all of that stuff.
Sure.
Never ever once thought that, you know, websites like Indeed would have the ability for employees to rate the employers. So I never thought to look it up. I actually stumbled across that entirely on accident trying to get my get the website to get my tax form off of last year.
Yeah.
And turns out they have a really high turnaround rate. And the reason is because the administration does not help you out at all. They actually kind of make it I did exactly what they told me to do, and then I got fired for it. Giving out too many detentions or whatever.
They
never exactly gave me the exact reason, but you know. Yeah, it's crazy. You can't give kids push-ups or anything anymore for punishment in PE class. It's wild.
And then that's why they fired you.
Doing that. I was just giving out detentions left and right because there was a bunch of kids that just didn't want to listen.
They didn't listen, yeah.
And sadly enough, it was actually kind of the older kids, like the sixth graders and the eighth graders were the ones. It was weird. It's like sixth grade would act out, eighth grade would act out. I'm like the whole class, you know, because they only had like a 30-minute PE, and trying to get them concise and to the point and getting them to do the activity. They didn't want to do it. They'd just run around and do whatever they wanted. And it was bad.
It was like
hurting
seventh
cats. Grade, which is weird because in contrast, seventh grade was a bunch of angels.
That's strange, yeah.
And so we're all like the little kids, the ones you think we would have a hard time getting them to play games and stuff that, you know, were specific, they would do it, no problem. But anyway, so that was actually my last job. Right before that, I had just worked in a restaurant. And yeah, I definitely got out at the right time because statistically, the working in kitchens is the number one most dangerous job right now because of COVID, because that's where most of the exposure is actually happening because everybody's, you know, dealing with
everyone's huddled around, walking around.
Well, even with
close
the,
by,
most of the kitchens are down to like one or two people in the kitchen, which is screw that. I'll tell you right now, I've had to be the only guy on the line or one of the only guys on the line. That's no fun. That's too much work for anybody. But
yeah, that sounds
between
annoying.
That and just the constant interaction between delivery drivers and the front of the house who then interact with the back of the house, the exposure rate is just ridiculous.
Well, I'm glad you're not there in that sort of environment. That would have, you probably would have contracted the virus already.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, absolutely glad I'm not involved in that anymore whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, before I was doing this, same situation, well, not exactly the same situation, but, you know, I was around people at times and I was always sick, man, you know, before wearing the mask. And now it's like, I haven't got a cold or anything in forever. And it's the first time and I could remember my friend. And I hate being sick, you know, I fucking hate that shit. So I don't know if the mask is working or it's because I've just not been around anyone.
I think it's a combination of both because, I rarely got sick anyway, but I got sick just before all this stuff.
Yeah.
Started, like, I was sick over Christmas break.
Oh, that sucks, right? Yeah,
that's 2019, like right before it really picked, the COVID thing really hit over here. And yeah, I haven't gotten sick or anything because aside from going and doing street piece fights and going and, you know, doing some, you know, training around a very small group of people.
You've been cool.
Yeah. You know, I've been in a very routine pattern of being around the same exact people who wouldn't show up if they were exposed or had any symptoms. And, you know, that or just being at home. You know, I'm either eating, sleeping, or training. That's it, you know?
That's probably the best thing for you right now.
Driving, sleeping, or training. I don't really eat that much. I made it sound like I eat more than I do. No, I,
you're doing what you're supposed to, I think, truly.
Yeah.
And by the way, your real name is Daniel, I believe.
Yeah, I prefer Danny, but yeah.
Or Danny, yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, I think your name's like Daniel or Danny, right?
Yeah, it's Danny. It's actually kind of funny. I used to prefer to be called Daniel, and then this girl I had a crush on in high school started calling me Danny all the time, and she wouldn't listen. So then it kind of flipped around, and now like the only people I let call me Daniel are like friends from when I was real little, like before I was 14, and like family members. And
isn't that funny? That,
it's like everybody else either calls me Danny, or now everyone calls me Shinigami, except for this Russian dude at my gym who calls me Chimichanga because he can't pronounce Japanese words.
That's a good one. But yes, isn't it funny that women have that sort of effect on us? If it's with a name or let's say like a band, for instance, you know, I went to a concert with one of my ex-girlfriends, a Nine Inch Nails concert way back in the early 2000s. And, you know, I loved the band, but for a while after we broke up, you know, I fucking hated the band. I hated the band and I hated her. So, you know, it lasted for a while, but it went away.
The funny thing was, it wasn't so much that because I had a crush on her that it went that way. It's because everybody else around started doing it because I met a lot of people through her and her friends. So
that's the worst.
So it kind of just spread from her more than anything else. It just kind of got to the point where I got tired of correcting everybody. So I was just like, okay, whatever.
Call me what you want. Yeah.
Like, I guess I'm Danny now.
Danny, yes. Well, Danny's fine. It works okay.
Yeah, I kind of didn't like it at first, but now I kind of like prefer it. It's you know, shorter, more concise, sounds kind of badass.
Yeah, it works. It sounds good. It rolls off the tip of the tongue very nicely. And of course, these ex-girlfriends, they are dream killers sometimes, my friend. That's what a lot of people forget. You know, the younger generations, they will learn that later on in life. Women are dream killers.
Yep, sometimes, man. I got a couple of exes that did a number on me emotionally and otherwise. Yep.
Well, a needle in a haystack if you find the right one, my friend.
Hashtag shout out Rachel.
Yes. Shout out Rachel, I mean. By the way, I was just thinking about The Ultimate Fighter. I'm going to draw this full circle for you. You're familiar with Nick Diaz, correct?
Yes.
Well, Jeremy Jackson, you know, he beat Nick Diaz many, many moons ago, back in like 2001. Well, Jeremy Jackson was actually training at a boxing gym right here in Imperial, California. And inside that boxing gym was myself, Jeremy Jackson, and Andy Ruiz, who you'll see boxing pretty soon again.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. And we were all there at one time.
6 degrees of separation, man. It's wild.
Isn't that crazy? I mean, we were all there at the same time.
You know who Raymond Daniels is?
Remind me. I'm kind of drawing blank right now since I am drinking beer.
He's the Bellator, I think, middleweight or something, kickboxing champion. He's also like 2-0 in MMA in Bellator. He was the Glory FC kickboxing champion for a while. He was like 11 or 15-0 undefeated, and then the only other person in there that was a challenge beat him, and then he moved to Bellator because there was no one else to fight at that point.
You know, I haven't been watching too much of Bellator, but I did see the last event with Ryan Bader. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, he's kind of a big deal. I mean, he's been a big deal forever. He was the number one point sparring karate champion in the world for 11 years straight. Dude was undefeated in the, I think it was a WCL, the World Champion League. That was a...
Oh, yeah, yeah. I do remember.
Chuck Norris's team kickboxing.
Yeah, I remember
in,
that.
In that little circle. The
little circle, yeah.
Yeah, he was undefeated in that.
Okay.
Well, so... Long story short, he's from Palmdale, and my original karate instructor, to this day, still actually trains with him. Helps
nice.
Him train.
Okay.
For stuff. So that's 6 degrees of separation or less, man.
I know.
I've actually met him a couple times at tournaments and stuff. He's a really cool guy. Like, we're literally in the same karate lineage. So
that is pretty badass.
Yep.
Very badass. You know, I was thinking of getting a few fights. Way back in the day, I was thinking about doing that, you know, as a career sort of thing, but I messed up my knee and it's never really been the same. So I haven't really thought about fighting anytime soon, but I did help lots of local fighters out here for a few years.
I actually can relate because I got a lot of injuries that's actually kind of what put my career on hold doing full contact for so long.
Yeah.
I was going to do an amateur fight in 2014 and I got my knee hurt training for it. It's never been the same, but I want this so bad. I never let it stop me. I got so many injuries. It's ridiculous. I have an AC separation in my shoulder.
Damn.
It was a minor one. It's scarred back together. But my right shoulder just ain't ever going to be the same. You know, I got the right knee injury. That is never going away. But that's kind of my own fault because as soon as it felt a little bit better, I wasn't supposed to walk for 3 months. And then like 2.5 months in, it felt better. So I went and...
You
went straight to from not doing anything to going to a tournament and getting first place.
That's funny. You're a wild man.
But, well, I was also in my 20s, you know. It's a little different once you get after, you know, a little past 25, 26.
I agree.
Don't start, you know, things don't heal as good anymore.
That's true. Yeah, you wake up after rolling for a day like you, I've been lifting weights for hours.
Yeah, it's, I'll never forget, even in my 20s, the first time I did an actual full jiu-jitsu class, I started under a guy who was doing it super old school with like the warm-ups.
The warm-ups in the beginning.
Of high intensity, nonstop.
That's like, how it was for us. Yeah.
Yeah. So did that, and I was so sore the next morning. I couldn't even get myself out of bed for like 3 days to go back to class or do anything. I didn't get out of bed unless I had to use the bathroom or absolutely could not stand the hunger in my stomach anymore.
Yeah, those days were rough.
I did not want to move.
Yeah, you would dread those days coming up knowing that you'd have to go do jiu-jitsu. And then, of course, you have to make sure you eat right or else you're going to be throwing up later.
Yep.
Yeah, terrible. But, you know, I got it done. And, yeah, let's talk about some of your fights here for a moment. How the hell did you even get involved here? Did you talk to somebody and they said, oh, we'll bring you in?
Okay, so... A year before, back in 2019, Chris Wilmore, Scarface himself, came out here to do a Cali event, and it was just outside of LA County lines, up to the north in like Kern County. I tried to sign up for it, but then my car got stolen. I got it back thanks to Facebook. No thanks to the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department.
Oh, wow.
Suck at their jobs. And then they were, you know, I had to tell them I couldn't make it. And then, you know, I got my car back. And then there was one in Vegas like a month or 2 months after that. But, you know, I didn't really have any money to go out there and do that. Plus, if I would have drove my own car, my car does not like hills. It would not have made that trip. Probably would have had the engine blow trying to get over past Barstow.
Oh, no. That's not a place where you want to be stuck, by the way.
No. In fact, it's actually kind of wild, though. The last street beast I went to in Vegas, the Corner Darkness, we're driving. Me and Rachel are driving out there in a rental car, and we see a car on fire just past Baker on the side of the road, on the side of the freeway, just completely engulfed in flames. It was the craziest thing. Nobody was around. I don't think anyone was in it or near it. The only other thing was a cop there, but that's kind of like random because that's
in
the middle of literally nowhere in the desert.
Yeah.
But so. I had joined the Street Beefs group. I had been in there in a year. I was kind of active in there. And then I found out they were going to have a West Coast chapter. So they started a West Coast group and everything.
That's how it started.
And so I joined the West Coast group and I signed up. And then Facebook's algorithm is all screwy. So I wasn't seeing every post from the group in my notifications or my feed or whatever. So I saw something that said it was canceled. Then I saw something that said it was moved to Vegas. So I was like, okay, well, Vegas, I can't do that. So then the day of Street Beast West Coast 1, I messaged Tank, Tiny Tank, Martin Rubio, who runs the West Coast branch, and asked him when the next one was going to be in California because I thought it was in Vegas. He's like, oh, it's today. I was like, oh, really? I thought it was in Vegas. I explained the whole situation with the posts and everything because I didn't see any of the posts. And even when I went to the group and was scrolling down, I scrolled down for 10 minutes and I still didn't see a single post. I was seeing posts from like a month and a half before that and still not seeing anything, you know, about it was moved to San Bernardino.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, please, can you please squeeze me in? Please, please, please. And there were a couple of no-shows. So he was like, yeah, man, come on.
Oh, we got lucky then.
Yeah. I mean, I had to leave like right then.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much what happened. Rachel was in the hospital. And so took my stepdaughter down with me to get her mind off of it.
I hear you.
And that's why I shouted her out the first time. And you can actually see my stepdaughter behind me in that fight. She's the girl in the tank top with the headphones.
Never noticed that. I'm going to have to go back and watch.
Yeah. So.
And the rest is history.
The rest is history. And then I fought a second time that day against Storm Rider. And that's what really, I didn't hear all the heckling in the first fight because I was focused on the fight. The only thing I heard, like, at the beginning was "Get him, Ryu," and that kind of made me roll my eyes a little bit because I knew they were heckling me. But then I went to fight Storm Rider, and all of a sudden, everybody's cheering for me, and I was like, "Okay."
That's how it goes, though, my friend. I mean, crowds are won and lost.
Oh, for sure.
That's
crowds. Crowds are fickle. People are fickle. They'll love you one minute, and they'll hate you the next if you screw up or if. The opposite, vice versa. They'll think you're a joke and you prove you're not. And then all of a sudden they're
your friends.
Just cheering for you.
Yeah. I get emails all the time telling me how they want me dead. So, you know, I hear you.
Yeah,
it goes with the turf though, man, you know?
Yeah.
But I know what I signed up for. You know, I enjoy those kind of comments. I'm sick and twisted. You know, I don't like getting good comments all the time. I like being trashed every now and then. It's fun.
Oh yeah, it is. you know, they tell Chris, tells us never to read the comments, but I'm always reading the comments.
Yeah, read the comments. Fuck it.
I actually have a video on my YouTube. It was one of the first ones I did when I started doing like actual videos on my YouTube instead of just, you know, uploading sparring matches from tournaments. And it was me reacting to the comments.
Nice, yeah.
Because there were some hilarious comments. I mean,
they're always some
gold.
I got
bullied my whole life. You got to learn to laugh at yourself. Otherwise, it's always going to get to you. And you know, the only thing that annoys me is when people are lazy with their insults and it's something I've heard a million times. It's like, okay, yeah, cool. I'm fat. I get it. Whatever. You know, but then if I hear a fat joke that's like, I've never heard it before, I'll laugh because it's funny to me. Because it's like, yeah, I'm fat, but I'll kick your ass. You know,
true.
Like, whatever.
Yeah, you're a big guy, by the way. You're like 6'2", 230 or something.
I'm like 286
You're
right
even
now.
More. Jesus.
I was actually 330 pounds when I did that first street fight.
Yes, the one with detail, I believe.
Yep. Yeah, the first 4 months of the pandemic shutdown were not kind to my waistline
yes.
at all because nothing was open. And then we had all this, you know, I'm sure you remember, we had all the whole state was on fire. So the air quality was terrible.
You were like a radio guy.
Yeah.
You're in radio guy shape. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. I was stuck inside eating comfort food.
Nice.
And playing video games because I was just stressed over.
Yeah, you're living
not
life.
Being able to train. That was the first time I hadn't been able to train at all in over a decade. Since before I started training. That's like my whole life revolves
around
my training schedule. You know, even when I got a job, I would always be like, well, okay, I can't work these nights.
Because you got to train.
Because I got to do this, you know. Everything about my schedule for years has revolved around, I got to be at the gym at this time or the dojo at this time every day or on these days or whatever. So those 4 months of not being able to go do jiu-jitsu or kickboxing or karate or anything, just, you know, that's kind of my social life, kind of my, you know, stress relief, you know. So when that was gone, I was just sitting around, you know, eating cheeseburgers and nachos and watching Netflix and playing video games because I had nothing else to do.
Enjoying life. Doing what you're supposed to do during that time, in my opinion.
I mean, I tried to work. Whenever the weather was nice and there was no smoke in the air, I would go out in the backyard where my little patio gym is set up and, you know, do some weights and do some, you know, exercises and stuff. But that wasn't really, you know, as frequent and frequent enough to burn off everything. So that's why I showed up looking
a little heavy.
Way that the heaviest I've ever been in my life.
But you still went in there and you still got that leg up there, man. Good job. Yep.
Well, you know,
you went for the decapitator right away.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was open, you know, and I've landed that shot in tournaments so many times. It was nice to finally be able to put power on it and see what happens.
You know, I've never roundhouse kicked anyone in Street Fight before, but I have kicked someone as soon as I hit this really big dude. You know, as soon as his ass hit the ground, he stumbled and fell back. As soon as he hit the ground, like, I gave him no time. I threw a kick right to his head and he went out. I normally wouldn't do that, but the guy was huge.
Hey, you know what?
I got
that's
scared.
Do it in the street, man. That's a street. That's why
I was scared shitless, dude. So I had to do it.
One, street fights are dangerous.
They're very dangerous.
Because there's no rules. There's no one to pull the guy off of you. Really, you don't know how many friends they have, and why it's a good idea to avoid street fights.
Run away, get away.
You never
yes.
know what somebody knows.
Yeah, I would advise everyone to just get away from that sort of situation.
And that's coming from somebody that's been in only been in like one or two kind of street fight situations since I started training and didn't even really get injured at all. You know, I got a cut to my scalp in one of them because I made a white belt mistake. But you know,
that shit's scary, man.
We'll get to in a little bit.
That shit is scary though, man. It's nerve wracking if you get in a real fight. It's different from grappling.
Because I was fighting somebody that I knew, and I knew they weren't going to be able to hurt me.
Yeah,
but they just wouldn't stop pushing it, and then they sucker punched me, so I had to do something about it.
Yeah,
you know, but yeah, it is. It is definitely, you know, when you're not used to having someone across from you all the time, especially. I think that's kind of like one of the reasons that, you know, I wasn't really that nervous aside from a split second. When I went to do Street Beast the first time,
you're kind of used to it.
All the karate, when you do karate tournaments,
yeah, I mean,
you have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, I grappled, and even then, I was nervous still. But I mean, in an actual fight, an actual street fight, that is nerve wracking.
Oh yeah, for sure, yeah. For sure, it's definitely nerve wracking.
A little different.
I mean, it's just kind of like, I think there's a level where you get used to having regular basis situations where you're fighting somebody, even though there's supposed to be rules and stuff, you know, sometimes people don't follow them.
That's true.
You know, so you don't know at karate tournaments, for the most part, you don't know you're fighting till the day of the event, just like street beefs. You know, you don't know what they know. You don't know how hard they're actually going to hit you, even though they're not supposed to hit you that hard.
Yeah, they can low blow you too on purpose.
I got uppercut into a table once by a guy who had only been training for 6 weeks.
There you go.
And the dojo actually literally pulled him in off the street because they saw him walking by and wanted a ringer.
Jeez.
So, you know, after a decade of that, you know, you kind of learn how to control your adrenaline, your emotions, and that fear kind of isn't there. Not in a way of being cocky. It's more like it's not really there in a way that's going to, you know, make you panic so much.
Right.
It helps you have a clear head when you're in situations that almost end up in a street fight or something. Cause you don't know. You don't know how many people fight that day. You don't know what they know. You don't know how long they've really been training. If they're sandbagging, if they're paid for a belt and don't have the control they should have because they haven't really trained because they're at a McDojo, you never know. So yeah, street fights are scary, but you know, that's why training and sparring and competing is actually really important because it helps your mentality to keep calm in those situations so that you can keep your wits about you and situational awareness.
That's right. I mean, this is going to sound funny, but you know, I fell down a flight of stairs maybe 2-3 years ago and I was helping a friend move a couch. And as soon as I hit the ground, I had tucked my head. And, when I was falling down, I like rolled, for some odd reason and it saved my life, I would say. And I credit that to, jiu-jitsu and judo.
Yeah, absolutely. Same thing with karate. My Shihan, works in construction. Well, he's an associate master now. I think Shihan is actually like an honorific title you get around 6th or 7th degree black belt in certain arts like judo and kempo,
right?
Karate, Shotokan, stuff like that. My associate master instructor, John Ramsey, works in construction. When he was still a Shihan 6th degree black belt over here, not too long after I started training, I guess he fell off a 20-foot ladder.
Whoa.
That tucked and rolled, and all he had was a bruised hip.
Yeah, that's how it worked for me, except I'm the only, well, since I knew people were watching, I actually did a kick up as soon as I hit the floor.
Nice.
Just to show them that I was, you know, unhurt. Fine. Yeah, but I mean, I was just, but as soon as I got up, I was hurting a little bit. I'm not going to lie.
Myself, too, I was jogging, I was kind of sprinting just the rest of the way home one time, walking around from around the corner to from a friend's house, and I tripped and I fell forward, and the forward break fall probably saved me from a broken jaw or at least some missing teeth.
Goddamn.
And it ripped the sleeve of my coat, and I've got a scar on my elbow from where it kind of got a little skinned up.
Yeah.
But that's so much better than broken bones or like even a broken arm. If I would have done the instinctual thing that everybody does and stick their arm straight out in front of them. Broken arm for sure. I've never actually had a broken bone in my life.
Lucky.
Well, broken nose once, but yeah.
A different situation, yeah. But yeah, judo and training jujitsu will definitely help you some way, somehow, or any sort of martial arts will help you out.
Any martial art that teaches you how to break a fall is definitely going to help you, because that's probably one of the most practical things you'll ever learn, because everybody trips and falls eventually.
That's right.
You know, or gets pushed or accidents happen. So that's definitely one of the most practical things is learning how to roll or break fall, because, you know, physics is no joke.
That's right.
And, you know, it's better to roll and disperse the force or slap the ground as you hit, depending on how you're landing, you know, and have 5 pounds of force hit your body instead of your entire body weight hitting your body.
Right. So, Danny, I did want to go through some of your fights here, but let's go through the very last fight you had with a Big Smile. You know, I did watch that fight, and it did come to a draw. And, you know, I did notice some things that concerned me just a little bit. Not, you know, I'm not trying to criticize you here, but I did notice some things that I thought would help you. You know, you need to work a little bit more on your basic wrestling. I'm not trying to, disparage you or anything, but I felt like you really needed to sort of work a little bit more on your takedown defense against the cage there. You need to work on that underhook to break that, you know, break the grip, break the wrist, go 2-1 on that, on one arm there at times. And I'm sure all these things you already know, and there you've already been fucking told all these things, but
yeah,
you just need to work on that and a little bit on your conditioning, and I swear you'll be gold.
I think part of it too was I really overestimated his skills. Way overestimated him. I made a mistake in the first round, trying to go for a standing ankle lock to end it real quick when I should have smash passed.
Right.
I ended up putting my feet square, and I gave him the Ashigurumi sweep, which was stupid of me. I think if I hadn't done that, I would have at least won the round, even if I would have just stayed in his guard and hit him. The whole thing was definitely just don't let him take me down. I actually kind of hopped towards the fence on purpose.
It was a good fight, though. It was a good fight. Entertaining, but yes.
It's one thing watching his other fights for research, and then when I actually fought him, what I thought his physical strength, where I thought his physical strength was going to be present, it wasn't, and where I thought it wasn't going to, it looked like he wasn't using as much physical strength. Like he was way stronger trying to grab my leg than I thought he was going to be, especially looking at his arms.
He looks strong, yeah.
If you saw what my boy Filthy Phil looks like, who was helping me train for it, who was kind of my stand-in for Big Smile, and you look at his arms.
You were ready.
You would have been like, yeah, his arms are, I mean, even I have kind of bigger biceps than he does, just a little bit. And I was just like, yeah, he's not going to really have that much grip strength, I don't think. That's where I was wrong. And then I'm like, okay, he gets me in ground and pound, or like he started to ground and pound me because he's TKO'd two people with it. I was expecting it way, way harder shots, but his striking power just wasn't there.
Like, not on the ground.
None of his shots hurt like at all. Not even the knees. The
you
knees
were good.
Didn't hurt.
Yeah, yeah. I did see those knees.
Street Bender was hitting me harder than him. And, even Street Bender hitting me wasn't something I couldn't handle, you know?
Yeah, that guy caught you with some good shots too, and you took them.
So, I think I definitely just need to move around, be a little more mobile next time on the rematch.
Right.
Footwork, and just kind of keep him from even getting his hands on me. I think I'll take it.
Yeah, sure. Just got to stop that wrist when he's getting you up against the cage there. You know, you could have hit the switch. Now, the classic switch, the wrestling, what they know, what they call in wrestling as a classic switch there, there was an opportunity where you could have easily done that to him. But again, all this, you already know what you have to do.
Yeah.
I don't need to tell you a damn thing. You know what to do.
Yeah, you know, I've got a great jiu-jitsu instructor.
Yeah, they told me these things.
He's working on me really a lot for the rematch and everything.
Yeah, it's just as a jiu-jitsu guy, and, you know, I've wrestled a little bit, I'm seeing these things, and I'm like, God damn it, he could have beat this guy.
Yeah, I
you could beat this guy.
Watched the fight, and I'm like, man, I could have beat him in the first round. If I would have just smash passed and got side control, and then that probably would have been it right
there. If you put the knee, yeah, when you had him mount, you know, when you could put your knee on the bell, and you could have delivered some strikes there, too.
Yeah, exactly. I could have beat him in his own game. Instead, I screwed up. You know what happened?
You got overexcited, I think, in my opinion. You didn't take your time.
No, I mean, yeah, I don't even think I was overexcited. I think I was just trying to end it. I just really
you rushed. You were. I was gonna say it seemed like you were rushing a little bit there.
And that's the problem, because I've done that ankle lock standing up like that a million times, but instead of just thrusting my hips forward to sink it in, I put my feet squared. I tried to step in to get more leverage, which was dumb because I didn't need to. And he'd already grabbed my left ankle before that, and I knew he was going to try to do that sweep. And I don't know why I stepped in like that, and just I should have just smash passed. I should have just smash passed to side control. But you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda. I definitely executed my game plan pretty well in the second round for sure. Spinning him around, putting his back on the cage, working elbows and
that
stuff.
That was good.
Clinch.
I'd like that. Yeah.
The third round, I had a little bit of a hard time spinning him around. In fact, the couple of times I did, he reversed it pretty quick, but I still got like landed more of the, it wasn't the most action packed round, but I definitely landed all the real significant strikes in that round.
Will we see a rematch, Danny?
Oh, rematch is definitely set.
I want the rematch.
It might actually be my last Street Beefs fight.
Really?
Because I already had an offer from Fury FC, but I wanted to do this fight first. And then since it kind of ended the way it did, and there was that little flub with the first round time because how loud the crowd was. And,
right.
Wolverine thought he heard someone yell time, and someone probably did yell time. He wasn't the timekeeper. You know, it might have even been a mistake. They might have been not have been yelling time. Someone might have said bang time.
Miscommunication.
People constantly yell bang time all the time. You know, but he definitely thought he heard time, so we stopped the round a little earlier than it should have been stopped. But you know, again, accidents happen. It's a, you know, even in pro orgs with professional refs, you know. So it's you know, it is what it is, but I definitely want to make sure that question gets answered before I go pro.
Yeah. You know what? I'm so glad you said that, you know, because I was going to ask you if you were thinking about going pro, you know, and going to a bigger organization and doing MMA professionally. Yeah. That's what I was hoping you'd do.
Yeah, going pro is definitely the goal, especially that, like, when, and, you know, a lot of things get announced in the group. Again, people who just watch the YouTube channel who aren't in the group, there's a lot of things that they don't know about. Or if they only watch the fight videos, I believe Scarface actually did post a video about it on the YouTube. You know, like a month before I actually went and fought, he had just announced that sometime after September, if you get at least 8 wins in the yard, you know, you can get qualified for them to sponsor you to go pro.
Nice.
You know, they'll, you know, pay for your medical fees, you know, since you have to get an MRI and a blood test and a physical and all of that, you know, to get your license. Or whatever it is that you need, depending on your situation. So that was a big motivator for me to go fight, in the West Coast chapter for sure.
Nice.
So that's kind of where it ended up. In fact, if it wasn't for the fact that it ended in a draw, I probably would have already been, set to fight pro in June. But I think, you know, like I said, I gotta get that, you know, question answered, you know, especially since, again, that nonsensical controversy over whether or not 15 seconds was going to make a difference and whether,
right,
you know, it would have been a stoppage or not. Cause I'm sure you saw that I was working my way up. You know?
I saw that.
Once you're in a turtle position, it's not that hard to stand up. I just wanted to make sure I was just trying to calculate either I'm going to grab his leg like I did with Street Bender. You know, I was trying to time the knees out. And then if I couldn't get a good timing on him and with like one or two more, I was going to just stand up.
Right.
You know,
well,
but I wanted to try to stand up where I wasn't going to just take a sneaky one to the jaw.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I gotta be honest with you here. Again, all you need to do is work on your takedown defense and work a little bit more on your conditioning. And again, I think you would be an incredible fighter.
I made a couple of mistakes. Like the first takedown he got, granted, I countered it pretty good.
Well, that's true. Yes, you did.
I figured his grip was way, way too high on my leg, and I was trying to circle him to the cage, but I circled him the wrong way. If I'd have circled him the other way, he probably wouldn't have been able to take me down, but I turned to my left, which was where he had my leg, which just gave him extra momentum to drag me to the ground. But, you know, I've been in those situations a lot, you know, training and stuff. Oh, yeah. So yeah, I wasn't, you know, afraid to go to the ground. It's not unfamiliar territory for me, like a lot of people thought. And I thought it was kind of funny that people still thought that after my Street Bender rematch, where I definitely displayed a lot of groundwork. But, you know, yeah, definitely going to be working on a lot more, you know, not even letting him grab my leg and definitely take down defense away from the cage. And yeah, my main thing is I got to get that rematch in and definitely just, you know, show everybody that last 15 seconds wasn't going to change.
You got it. Don't worry.
I was still in the fight.
Yeah. I think you'll be able to handle him much better now that you know what to do. You know exactly what to do this time. And I don't think you'll let him go so easy if you get him on the ground now.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. If I get a position where I can, you know, get the side control, I'm definitely going to make sure I don't squander it. Or even if I just get any top position where I can work the ground and pound. And
yeah, stay on him. Stay mounted next time. Rain down some blows.
Because it's, you know, it's definitely not, you know, I don't need to rush for that leg submission. You know, I mean, he's open for leg submissions for sure, you know, unless he works on that. But I didn't need to rush for it the way I did. And there was other things I could have done. But I think that was kind of the thing about that fight. I think it was mostly a feeling out process the first round. For sure.
You live and learn, though. You learn what you have to do, and now you will be a lot better next time out.
Yeah, for sure. And that's my thing. You know, as a martial artist, any martial artist should always strive to evolve and adapt and improve. You know, and I think that's kind of one of the reasons I was able to stay in the fight and make sure it even, you know, went the way it did. When I was doing good was because I made sure that I trained for him because I knew I was fighting him. Whereas I kind of feel like even though he said he was taking it seriously and kind of training for it, if you notice, he said it himself when he got interviewed on the Crowd Beer Review, you know, I'm just going to kind of do what's worked so far. You know, you can't stick to one game for everybody. You know, it's never going to work every time.
That's right. So, different body types. You learn that in
different
jiu-jitsu.
Body types, different skill sets, you know.
Yeah, that's right. You know, there's some guys I can't armbar because they're too damn big, too strong. So that's when you have to switch to a bicep slicer and you're good to go still.
I think the other thing, too, was everybody else he fought either didn't display any groundwork. Because I know Ryu Senin trains jiu-jitsu, too, but he kind of just is used to stand up.
Yeah.
And, you know, he had been waiting all day and was kind of just, you know, thinking about the drive home. Apparently, I talk to him all the time.
Nice. Okay.
So, you know, it also depends. That's the thing, too. How much is your opponent's head in the fight when you're fighting them? You know what I mean? So I think the first, like, three of the four guys he fought didn't have any ground game. And one of them was kind of just not, you know, his head wasn't exactly in it in the moment like it should have been.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of the thing, too. You know, everybody, even me, everybody is going to run into somebody, especially when you compete, you're going to run into somebody that's going to have an answer for everything you do. And they're either going to just edge you out or they're going to completely annihilate you and pick you apart. And eventually it happens to everybody.
Yeah.
The only exception I've ever seen is John Jones. That man is unbeatable.
I haven't really seen anyone do much to him too much. I mean, I've seen him, you know, we've seen him lose a little bit at certain times, certain exchanges, but, you know, he still wins the fight ultimately. But we have seen him get touched up a number of times by a few fighters in the last several years of his career.
I think he's only really been touched up like twice. I think it was Reyes kind of gave him some work. And the big Swedish dude.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't remember his name, but... yeah, I remember that fight too. That was wild.
Right.
But yeah, man, that's just, it is what it is there. And I'm definitely looking forward to the rematch. Rematch is going to be here in California, actually. So I told him after the fight, I'm going to take him to In-N-Out and then he'll want to move to California for that.
Is In-N-Out open?
Yeah. Yep. In fact, I don't know about your county, but my county just started opening everything back up to limited capacity. I actually just got to go see Godzilla versus Kong in the movie theater, and that's the first movie I've seen in over a year.
By the way, you were talking about Alexander Gustafsson.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, his last name started with a G.
I totally forgot, but yes, going back to Godzilla versus Kong, I did see the movie myself, and you know, I felt like it's visually, I thought it was a fantastic, stunning film. But in terms of writing, like it seems like the writers got lazy almost there, and they sort of dropped the ball. I liked it. Don't get me wrong. I just think, man, the writers kind of screwed up.
I've heard that from a few people. My thing about it is because I grew up watching all the old Godzilla movies. I own the entire Showa collection. I have most of the Heisei collection.
So you're like a big mark for Godzilla.
Godzilla was one of the first things that I really ever like. When I was a little kid, they used to have on Channel 9, they used to have Monsterpiece Theater every Friday or Saturday. And we would watch that. So I watched all the old Showa era Godzilla movies growing up.
So you saw Godzilla versus Mothra.
Yep.
Godzilla and all the
versus
others.
Mothra. I think I missed Godzilla versus Kong, the original one, when they showed it on TV. I didn't see that until I was at my cousin's house, like kind of a distantly related cousin down in Calexico.
Stop there. El Centro is a few miles away from Calexico, by the way. It's the next town over.
Yeah, I just looked it up when we started the conversation on my phone, actually.
That's pretty funny. So everything comes full circle, by the way.
Well, you know, it's a small world.
That's awesome.
And yeah, everything does come full circle. So, you know, all those older Toho movies, especially the later ones towards the end of the Showa era, especially like the middle of it, like there was some pretty flimsy writing in those too.
Oh, yeah.
I actually think the way this one was written really felt like the perfect blend between the more modern, up to date, legendary style, you know, kaiju monsterverse movies and the original Toho Showa era style stuff.
You know what? I think I just wanted
fitting
more.
Me because it's mm-hmm. definitely, you know, kind of the remake we've been waiting for since the original Godzilla versus Kong. You know, I mean, I grew up, in fact, that was actually one of the things that used to make me mad as a kid. I went to a video rental store and, you know, probably a good portion of the people listening to this probably don't know what that even is anymore. But, I went to a video rental store and, I saw Godzilla versus King Kong, VHS, and the box cover had the King Kong head from the Dino De Laurentiis 76 remake and the Godzilla from Godzilla Returns on the cover. So I thought they had made like a 90s, like up to date remake of it. And I rented it and I was a kid. So I shelled out money I had made like mowing lawns and washing cars and having yard sales. Right.
Right.
You know, my petty little pocket cash that was kind of precious at the time. To rent this movie only to see the actual VHS was just the original, you know, 1962 movie I'd already seen before. So seeing this was great. I thought the writing was actually in line with the original era of Godzilla movies, and I felt like it was kind of fitting. Yeah, could it have been had a deeper story like the first, you know, like 2014 Godzilla? Yeah, maybe. But I mean, It's the highest grossing legendary MonsterVerse movie of the entire franchise. So
right.
Obviously, I think people cared more about watching Godzilla and King Kong beat each other up than the writing.
Right. Yeah. I don't think people really care too much about that. But I just thought I wanted it a little bit better. Is what it is.
I kind of see where you're coming from. I mean, it could have maybe been a little bit more solid. You know. The plot was definitely just enough to keep the action moving along and kind of link up everything and set up that ending.
You know what it was? I'll be honest. You know what it was? This is what it was. About a week or two before I saw the movie, I just happened to watch Godzilla, you know, the 1998 movie. And I thought, you know, I watched that movie and I thought, hey, I'm going to watch the new movie here and it's going to be awesome. And well, it was awesome. Don't get me wrong. But again, the writing is just, I didn't like it that much. That's all. It's not a big complaint, but again.
Well, no, I mean, I get it. Like I said, I see where you're coming from. I mean, there's no denying that it is flimsy writing. But if one is to look at the entire catalog of Godzilla movies.
Overall, it's good. Yeah. I'm with you on that.
It's not just that. It's just the fact that kind of flimsy, you know, writing to just set up the monster fights is kind of really the maiden point or the main history or track record of the Godzilla franchise past the first Godzilla movie. And, you know, I think the only real heavily story-driven Godzilla movies that have been around are the original.
The original, yeah.
1985, Shin Godzilla, Godzilla 2014. And those are really the only ones that have a really good, well-written story to them. And even Shin Godzilla is a little arguable. It's just maybe too much story and too much focus on the human side of things. Because it, I don't know if you've seen Shin Godzilla or not, but it kind of drags a lot. And if you don't actually understand what the movie really is about, because all the movies where Godzilla is kind of the destructive villain, only monster in the movie kind of thing, those are all allegories for something in real life that has happened to Japan. So obviously the original, he was an allegory for the atomic bomb.
Right, right.
And Shin Godzilla was inspired by the Fukushima disaster. And a big part of the reason the Fukushima disaster got so bad was because of all the government bureaucracy and, you know, A has to ask permission from B and C and da-da-da-da-da. And that's, like I said, I don't know if you've seen Shin Godzilla or not, but that's like a huge chunk of the movie. Like half the movie is boardroom meetings.
I recall seeing a portion of that a couple years ago.
So, you know, there's a balance there. Either you have a decent plot, you have, you know, more focus on the monster action, or, you know, just enough plot to have the monster action set up, or you have too much story and it drags a little bit. Because that's kind of what happened. All those other ones, it's kind of the thing. Like, it makes sense, like, in the original Godzilla, the way they paced it, because of what it was supposed to be and what it was supposed to be about. You know, all of the stuff that you see, especially if you ever see the original Japanese cut, you know, yeah, it's slow and it's long, but when you understand why, it's absolutely acceptable and you really can't complain about it. But then you get to Shin Godzilla where you could complain about it a little bit. And then you have like Godzilla versus Kong where it's not really much story and the characters are really only there to drive along just enough of the plot to get from fight A to fight B to fight C. And, yeah, like I said, you know, so obviously, you know, there have been movies in the series that have better storylines and especially the MonsterVerse, you know, and I get it. You know, there could have been more of a plot, like, you know, King of the Monsters had more of a plot. And even that was kind of not as solid as the 2014 plot, but it still had more of a plot. You had more human motivation for what was going on than in this.
Right, and either way, it still made $358 million worldwide.
Oh, actually, it's like worldwide right now is like $1.6 billion.
Jesus.
Oh, no, never mind. You're right. It's I just got that mixed up. It's actually the entire Legendary MonsterVerse combined. All four movies have just totaled because of this. Like they've totaled over $1.6 billion for the whole franchise.
Someone had a good paycheck recently, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, for sure. And we might actually get more MonsterVerse movies because this one's doing so good, which is ironic because it has the, you know, you would think that the one with the least story would probably not, you know, do the best considering that King of the Monsters kind of had the lowest gross out of the four. But you know what? I mean, it didn't just save the MonsterVerse. I think it's almost single-handedly saved movie theaters because that was,
yeah.
I think that was what a lot of people was the first ticket they bought when their local movie theaters opened back up. Because I know
point.
I did.
Yeah, good.
I've
point.
Actually seen it three times in the theater.
Oh damn! So you're totally in.
Oh totally, dude. I mean, I am a huge, like I said, since I was a kid, I can watch the movies over and over and over and over and never get sick.
Never
of them.
Get bored. Yeah.
Ever, you know, I can watch the original Godzilla versus Kong and all of its cheesy glory probably another 100 times, and I'll still always be entertained by it.
That's how I am with horror movies, too, by the way. I like bad horror films. That's just how it goes. But yeah, Godzilla versus Kong made a lot of money, and that reminds me, wasn't Mortal Kombat supposed to come out?
No, that comes out in 2 weeks.
In 2 weeks, okay. I thought it already had came out. I'm not sure why I thought that,
nope,
but...
not yet. It was supposed to come out. I think it was supposed to come out on the 16th, and then got moved to the 23rd for some reason.
Interesting.
So, I'm definitely going to go see that probably on the 25th.
You'll be first in line.
I would go on the 23rd, but there's a Street Beast West Coast. And I got to go corner a couple of people.
Would you show up at the movie theater in full gear for the Mortal Kombat?
You know what? I just might.
You should. That would be awesome.
I just might.
I think you should.
I think I should.
I think you should, to be honest. Like, I would do it if I were you. That's fucking badass.
It's sort of cosplay and it sort of isn't, but I definitely think I will. I think it'd be hilarious.
Dude, I think that's gold. I would do it if I were you.
Especially since people recognize me out here anyway. Might as well just one time
live up the gimmick like Ric Flair.
Woo!
There you go.
See, I never got into professional wrestling because I wasn't really allowed to watch it, but I'd sneak it sometimes. And then, like, that's one of the things I love about YouTube. YouTube is an online archive of
awesome
yeah. hidden, lost, ancient gems. I've actually been able to see commercials that came on TV 30 years before I was born because of
YouTube. Yeah,
YouTube. And I'm probably weird for wanting to just watch commercials. But even when I was a kid, I always wanted to watch the commercials.
They were more entertaining, though, back then when we were growing up.
Some of them were pretty entertaining.
Yeah.
But so my thing is, like, I'll sometimes go on YouTube and I'll look up old pro wrestling promos from, like, the 80s and the 90s.
Nice.
When they were actually really, really entertaining. Of course, you'll never, ever top the Macho Man for entertainment value with those Because that guy was, I mean, I don't know if it was the steroids, the cocaine, or both
everything.
At the time, because they were all doing all that.
They were all coked up back in the day.
But his promos, man.
They were nuts, right?
We're going to do a 180. We're going to do another 180. Oh, yeah, whoa.
I think I'm
the Macho Man.
I think the Ultimate Warrior had everyone, you know, he was all coked up.
Oh, yeah. Well, the Ultimate Warrior was a trip and a half anyway, coked up. Yeah,
he was in the galaxies.
Half of his promos are just him breathing heavy.
That's right. Yeah, YouTube is awesome. Oh, go ahead.
Because my space gods.
That's just like him.
Impersonating people and characters is kind of a useless hidden talent of mine.
Nice. Well, it's a good one.
I think my favorite all-time Macho Man promo, though, was the cream of the crop one where he's pulling little coffee creamers out of nowhere. Oh yeah, 'cause I'm the cream of the crop. Yeah, when the going gets tough, the cream rises to the top. On balance, off balance, oh yeah. 'Cause I'm the Macho Man, and I'm the cream of the crop. And he just puts the cream up on top of his head and then runs away.
Right. Yeah, lots of classics, and man, it's kind of hard to watch wrestling these days. You know, I try to watch the WWE recently, and there's all sorts of monitors going on in the back. It's a really tiring on the eyes.
You know, that was kind of the thing too. Like, I never, like, I had friends that would watch it, and I'd go spend the night at their house and stuff. When I was like a preteen, and yeah, that was like during the Attitude Era, and nice, I really couldn't get into it when they were watching it. It wasn't like when I would sneak it at my grandparents' house when my mom was at work, when I was over there visiting them, because my mom worked near where they lived. I go down there sometimes on the weekends and visit for the weekend. She would, you know, not have, so she went out to drive from all the way over here, and I get to see my relatives. And you know, in the '80s and the early '90s, it was all like really colorful and, you know, really, you know, unique kind of, everyone was a very unique character, you know, and then the Attitude Era hit, and then everything after that, like everything's kind of generic. Everyone kind of just looks the same.
Looks the same. Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, some right. people could argue that, yeah, everyone back in like the 90s and the 80s, they all the pro wrestlers were just big, huge, roided out dudes with long hair. Yeah, maybe on the surface when you're just watching them actually wrestle and they don't have all their gimmicky stuff on because that's all costumes that would get in the way. But like when they were doing promos and walking out and doing all, like, you know, you would never confuse, you know, Nature Boy for like the Million Dollar Man, like that's ever. True. You know, those were very distinct dudes.
Yeah, everyone's character was written out so good back in the day.
Yep.
Good storylines and everything. But yeah, not like today. You know, everyone looks the same now.
Yep.
Kind of weird. But yes, pro wrestling has changed dramatically over the last several years. It's not as popular as it once was, like when we were growing up during that Attitude Era. I'm surprised to hear that. I'm surprised you weren't really that into it growing up when you were, you know, just a little kid during that era.
The closest thing I ever got to that, and I don't know if you remember this because a lot of people don't, There was a show that used to come on, I think it was on Fox Kids, or it was either on Fox Kids or Channel 13 on Saturday mornings, called WMAC Masters. And it was like kind of like pro wrestling, but it was like martial art, like striking martial arts, like traditional martial arts type stuff. And they were all characters too, but that was like the closest thing, and somehow I managed to get away with watching that. That was the closest thing I ever got to pro wrestling. I was into that. That didn't last very long, but I was definitely into that.
What about watching, you know, like adult shows when you're like a kid? You know, you had to, you know, watch something late at night, and you know the channel was all scrambled, but you could sort of see like a breast every now and then. You remember those days?
You know what? Where I live, that didn't really happen. You know, sometimes I'd channel surf past that.
You had the box.
I think everyone in the 90s kind of had that experience at some point, somewhere, at someone's house.
Eventually, you had the box, yeah.
Well, even without the box over here, the only adult channel we had in the 90s was the Playboy channel. And if you didn't have, even with the box, you couldn't just flip to it and have it come in at all. Our local cable companies have always been kind of different like that.
Nice.
Versus going down to LA where, you know, my relatives live, and you know, the way channels would come in down there, more channels with basic cable than we had, and a whole different channel lineup, like channel order. Aside from like all the local news, like 1, 2, 4, 5, 7, 9, 11, and 13 were all the same because it's all one county area. So they're all the local stations for the whole area. But yeah, I know what you're talking about. You know, funny nice. Thing, bringing things full circle again. Someone I watch on YouTube that reviews like bad movies pointed out that the appeal of Godzilla movies was that it was basically it wasn't him. It was the guy who does the Angry Video Game Nerd.
I remember him. Yeah,
he when he went out of character, he was just talking about Godzilla movies and stuff, and he pointed out that the appeal of Godzilla movies is it's just pro wrestling in monster suits.
That's a good observation. Yeah.
And I thought about it, and I'm like, yeah, when you got Godzilla drop kicking a giant beetle.
Yeah. And it's all kind of right. And it's guys in suits, you know, already.
Yeah. Well, and we think about it too. And that's kind of probably because of the suits. What kind of fighting can you really do?
Yeah.
That isn't kind of some form of wrestling.
That's right.
Because it's the only thing you can do that it's not going to completely destroy the suits. And it kind of looks cool. Because that's, if you think about it, that's how wild animals fight anyway. They wrestle. You know, they don't really punch each other because most animals can't do that. So everything in the wild is some form of grappling.
Grappling, right.
From praying mantises fighting each other to scorpions to lions, tigers, and bears. It's all grappling.
It's a form of Greco-Roman wrestling.
Yeah, sort of.
Pretty odd. But yes, you know, we are running out of time here. And I do want to thank you, Danny, for spending some of your time with us here on the program. And my God, you know, I could talk to you for another hour. I feel like we could talk about all kinds of stuff since, you know, we're around the same age, you know, through a lot together.
Yeah, I definitely sure. like a good conversation. I could probably talk all night, man.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to bring you back here sometime.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'd love to be back. This was awesome.
Yeah, my friend. I would love to do this again with you. I had a great time here. I hope you had a fun time chatting here. And before I let you go, definitely plug anything you'd like. The floor is yours. Go ahead. Anything you want.
Not too much to plug that I haven't already plugged already, but I do have merch in my Teespring store.
There you go.
Shinigami's Killer Merch on Teespring. I have two YouTube channels to follow. Shinigami the Reaper MMA and Lord Demonius the Undead Pyro. The second one is me as a character all gothed out, kind of hosting old public domain, like bad horror movies.
That's your pro wrestling gimmick.
Kinda. No, I think if I was going to do a pro wrestling gimmick, it would be King Karate, and I'd come out in my gi and everything.
Nice. Okay. That works.
It'd be
too.
Like Kung Funaki, but I wouldn't suck.
Yes. Coming to on Japan Wrestling.
That's something that only people our age would know about too. Kung Funaki.
That's true. Eventually, we'll see you.
I knew you would get it. I would get it. Man, yes. That's the only reason I brought that up.
Eventually, we'll be seeing you wrestle in Japan after fighting.
I would love to do any kind of fighting in Japan. I would definitely do pro wrestling in Japan. I actually want to go fight in Japan. There's a promotion there called Ganryujima. It means Battle Island. It's MMA with a twist. There's no barrier in the ring. You're on a raised platform. the rules are more in favor of sumo and judo than your traditional MMA.
Really?
You only have like 15 seconds on the ground, like a judo, an Olympic judo match. So it's really hard to win by ground and pound or submission.
Oh, shit. Okay.
You have to wear a gi top. And you could also win by pushing your opponent out of the ring 3 times.
So it's a bit of a combination of styles here.
Yeah, it's truly a mixed martial arts, like in the most mixed sense of the word. I would definitely love to go over there and fight in that.
You're going to have to send me a link to that. I never heard of that.
I stumbled across that around the same time I stumbled across Street Beast back when it was much smaller, and it was like in a little room with 3 judges and a couple of ring girls and like almost no audience at all. And now they, you know, have an arena and, you know, people, a bunch of kids come out in geese with all kinds of sponsor cards to hold up. It's crazy. It's funny too, because I actually got Jens Pulver into all this stuff. He does a Twitch stream and I go on there sometimes.
Oh yeah, Jens Pulver.
And hang out with him because he's a huge supporter of Street Beast, and he'll help, you know, give pointers to the fighters. He'll watch your fights and give you tips. And he just likes watching fights in general on there. So I got him into karate combat and Gon Ryujima and Kudo and a couple of other things that are kind of just obscure. But yeah, also shout out my chiropractor, Dr. Hodges at AV Chiropractic. Not a sponsor, just does excellent work. Definitely if you need chiropractic work in the Antelope Valley, go hit him up because he will get you straight. I actually go to him before every time I fight. Whether it be Street Beefs or a karate tournament, I go to him every time.
Nice.
Every time, like a day or two before, and then I take it easy, and then I go compete, and I'm nice and loose and ready to go.
Very nice. Once again, thank you so much for being a part of the program, and ladies and gentlemen, give him your support. That is Shinigami. Check him out whenever you can. Look him up on YouTube. Watch him kick someone else in the face very soon. Once again, brother. Yeah, once again, brother, thank you so much, and I'll talk to you on the other side here.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you.
No problem. And there he goes, boys and girls. That was Mr. Shinigami. Look him up whenever you can. Search his name and you can find all his fights right there on YouTube. Really appreciate his appearance here on the program. And I do want to thank all of you for sticking around. First-time listeners out there, much respect to all of you. If you liked the interview, make sure to like and subscribe. Thank you for sticking around, by the way. I really appreciate that. We will do this again very soon. And with that said, the world is a mysterious place, and life itself is a mystery. Until next time.